You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet, full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast. Number 47, Dream Interpretation with Tricia Kelly. If we haven't met, my name is Nancy Montori, and my number one goal in life is to teach you how to live a long, healthy, compassionate existence. I do that by advocating a whole foods, plant-based diet that is kind to your body, kind to the planet, and kind to animals. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks to all of you that take the time to reach out to me with your kind words. They mean so much to me, and I love hearing from you. Today's podcast may sound like an unusual subject for a health and wellness podcast, but since the publication of Sigmund Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams, dream interpretation has been a technique often used in psychotherapy, and can contribute to treatment success in a healthy mind. As we all know, a healthy mind, healthy body connection is the key to a much happier life. In what we dream is powerful, and dreams are always telling you something you don't know, so it's important to understand what your dreams may be telling you. In lengthy, distressful, fearful, or violent nightmares can disrupt our sleep. And as we all know, sleep is essential to human health. Studies have also shown that certain types of dreams can say a lot about what's going on in our bodies. Dream interpretation is also fun, and there is nothing wrong with a little fun once in a while. So today, I would like to introduce you to Tricia Kelly, who I met on a retreat many years ago. I had the privilege of her interpreting a couple of my recurring dreams, and it really helped me understand what was going on inside my brain and why I felt so stressed out in my dreams. And once I understood why I was dreaming what I was dreaming, I stopped having the recurring anxious dreams. So here's a little bit about Tricia Kelly. Tricia Kelly teaches an inspirational blend of Western and Eastern wisdom as she guides individuals to interpret their dreams and life experiences. She explores the known and the unknown, the intellect and the intuitive. The goal is awareness and thoughtful consideration of each individual life pattern, always emphasizing the profound beauty and mystery each contains. Her 38 years of teaching are enhanced with perspectives gained from traveling the world, and she has studied with exceptional teachers who expanded mind-body connections to wellness. She includes in her work the symbolism and wisdom of Carl Jung and Edward Edinger. Tricia's non-judgmental interpretations and inherent Irish humor bring a certain lightness to the work of growth and change. Tricia's philosophy is that dreams are simply and astonishingly a doorway into our deeper selves. They teach us who we are and how we are made. They teach us what it will take to satisfy our own great hunger. Tricia has an office in Costa Mesa, California, has guest lectured at Chapman University, has been part of the Golden Door Spa Wellness Program, and right now she is currently traveling and will begin seeing new clients in February 2019. You can reach out to her at dreamdrop676@gmail.com. That's dreamdrop676@gmail.com. And I'll have a link in this week's show notes. So, Let's hear what Tricia has to say. Hi, Tricia.
Hello, Nancy. How are you today?
Oh, I am doing so well. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm excited. That's
yeah, I'm excited because I have had the privilege of having a couple of my dreams analyzed by you, and it was life-changing for me, honestly. So I am excited to share your extensive dream knowledge with our community.
Okay.
Well, Tricia, the first thing I wanted to ask you, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in dream analysis and all that?
Sure. As a youngster, we moved quite often. I went to 16 schools. So my inner world became more important than my outer world. And I would tell myself a story as I was falling asleep and follow it into a dream.
Wow.
And that didn't seem like any big deal. But, and then I went into regular life after University of Washington, and I worked. And when I was 32, I came across a teacher who was quite an amazing person. She was born with a set of skills you don't see very often, and she is the one who took me into dream work and into my intuition, and she has been a special person in my life, and in a way, she was sort of the guide that took me where I was going to go anyway.
What gifts did she have?
She was born clairvoyant. She has a heart as big as Texas, if that's not, maybe even bigger. Anyway, she has a way of moving you in directions. And I think she's one of the few people I can say are practically without ego.
Wow.
And she had quite the upbringing as well. When she was a little girl, her father, she lived in South America somewhere, and her father went on a trip, and he gave each of the daughters, there were two of them, a little gold ring. And the first daughter held on to hers, but my friend, Carolyn, hers, she went down to the beach one day when she was quite young, and she lost the ring in the ocean. And she was so upset that every day she went down to the ocean to look for her ring. And one morning she went down, she was standing at the where the waves lap in, and the ring washed up.
Wow.
She also, when she was 18 years old, went on a journey into a foreign country where she was skiing. And she had a skiing accident, and she had no identification on her. Nobody knew who she was. And she spent 18 months in an incubator. I mean, so that she could breathe. And she said if that hadn't happened, she never would have turned inward. So usually there's, or often at least, there's some sort of trauma or loss or some kind of event in your life that shifts you to an interest in that area. So she's taught a lot of people.
Wow. Well, the very first question I really wanted to ask you is, why are dreams important? And why are they important to understand?
To my mind, they are, well, first of all, there's a study that shows if you take a person and every time they start to go into the REM state, which is where you dream, you wake them up and you deprive them of their dream time. When you allow them to go back to normal sleep patterns, they dream more as if the body is trying to catch up. So there's some physiological reason the dream is important without ever being interpreted.
And how about spiritual reasons?
And they are certainly and certainly have served that for me, served that purpose for me. Once I had a sense of how to look at them, not to look at them literally. Dreams don't speak in English. They speak in symbols. And when you see a symbol, it's very important to just say, how does that make me feel? What do I feel when I see that symbol. And that will take you, begin to take you into reading dreams as pointers to what's going on in your own psyche, to what's going on inside you. And they don't just touch on spiritual matters, they can touch on physical matters as well. So I think for me, they became very important because I felt I had a lack of meaning in my life at one point. And this became so fascinating to me. And I then came to other teachers who, I was with a meditation teacher from China for 20 years, and also a former physician who decided that there were a lot of good physicians, but there weren't a lot of good metaphysicians. And I was a student of his for quite a long time as well. He was the one that was so interested in Carl Jung's ideas about dreaming and about life. And so those people, I don't know if you found it in your life, but you just find mentors and people you can admire and want to hear from.
What do you mean by physical matters?
Let's see. When I was 51, I had a dream, and it just showed me a gleaming, clean bathroom with a big white bathtub and a drip of blood down the side of it that was drying. And the words came, "It is finished." And I was finished with my menstrual cycle.
Wow.
So if you just quiet yourself, very often things will come to you about them. Ideas, feelings.
Is there a science behind dreaming?
I think science has certainly been interested in dreaming, as well as lots of other kinds of people and areas of study.
Is there like scientific evidence that about dreams or how it affects the body? Or
yes, there's something called lucid dreaming, and someone named Stephen LaBerge in the 80s was studying lucid dreaming. And the idea is, some people are aware that they're dreaming while they're in the dream. And he was interested in how you do that and can you do it at will. And he discovered, yes, he could. The idea of incubating for a dream is to remain still and to, just before you go to sleep, focus on what you want to dream about. I would like information on my left leg. I would like information on my daughter. Something like that. With practice, many people can get an answering dream. The confusion is, how do you know that the dream you had is an answer? Are you reading it properly? But all of these studies go on, and you know, the psyche is not something you can see. It's not your brain. But it is a place from which all of your feelings and thoughts are generated. And what is it that generates? You can't make yourself have a thought.
In your bio, you mentioned mind-body connections to wellness. Mm-hmm. We improve our health and more self-awareness of our spiritual side, our connected side, by understanding our dreams?
I believe we can, yes.
Can
you I've seen
that?
It, yes. To be given direction when you are facing an illness, when you have been given a diagnosis and there's a great deal of fear, then those are the times that you go in and you incubate for help. And it can be as simple as a dream comes through that shows you a plant And if you follow that, you might find that it is the basis of a medication. You might find that it urges you to push yourself in terms of exercise or to cut back, to take a machete to a schedule that's too heavy. All of these things have to do with our wellness and with balance and wholeness is what we're after. And we have so many different possibilities within the dreaming world. So first, you want to come to the place where you can understand where a dream comes from and what to do with it. And so dreams come from the unconscious, which is a huge area. It's a misnomer to call it the unconscious in my mind, that it is where so much of our wisdom and unconscious material lies. And in a way, the conscious part of us, Jung said, is about the size of a rowboat. And the unconscious is about the size of the ocean. So you can understand how the conscious part would be somewhat threatened by how big the unconscious is, about being flooded. At times we recognize being flooded or overwhelmed. I think you mentioned a dream about a view one of your listeners had about all her teeth falling out. That's a dream of being on overwhelm. You would know that because in order to work the dream, you say, okay, what are my teeth for? What is it trying to say to me? And the teeth and the grinding and the chewing is what allows us to take what's coming to us in terms of food, chew it up, and make it useful to the body. So if you look at it from the position of, well, what does that mean? It means that your ability to handle what's coming towards you in the present is reaching a limit, and that you want to get some help. You don't need to do everything yourself. It's somewhat of a ailment of the culture, isn't it, that we all are doing way too much.
How do we tap into that unconscious side of ourselves?
You set an intention. It's a very powerful thing to do. Simple, and it doesn't seem like it should be so fancy, but to set the intention, I need information about such and such. I would like to be able to exercise, but I don't seem to be able to do that. Show me the way. You know, it won't just arrive in dreams. Sometimes you'll pick up a book at the library that fell on the floor. You've heard this story. And it'll have a sentence that says, oh, and that inspires you and that moves you along. It could happen by meeting a person who will become a mentor or a person you'll never see again who says something that clicks.
That really leads to mindfulness because, you know, a lot of people just run through life and, you know, don't notice things like that. A book falls, you know, from a shelf right in front of them. Funny you should say that because I had, in the last 2 days, I've gone to 3 grocery stores. In all 3 grocery stores, just a loaf of bread fell in the aisle. Nobody standing near it. 3 times. And I'm like, what the heck does that loaf of bread mean? And I mean, I don't know if it means anything or, you know, nothing, whatever. But it's just like, I notice things like that. And I think that has created a lot of serendipity for me, you know. And so how can we get better, you know, be more mindful about, you know, the universe showing us the way?
Well, I think quiet time and having the desire for that to happen. So sitting quietly and imagination is so powerful. Imagining being able to understand your own unconscious, to understand what's happening when 3 loaves of bread, it gets a little harder to believe after 3, doesn't it, that it was an accident? So what does bread mean to you?
That's a good question.
And you just see what plops up. You just see the bread of life, the bread of, you know, whatever it might be. Bread used to be a quarter, as my father would say. You know, see what the unconscious offers up and then spend a little bit of time on it rather than dismissing it or getting on to the next thing on your list. You could then ask for a dream. What's being said here? What is it about bread?
I will try that tonight. Maybe I'll have a dream about bread. That would be amazing. So I know a lot of people who experience anxiety in their dreams. Are negative emotions more common than positive ones?
I don't know the answer to that. We tend to remember the dreams that have some sort of kick to them, just like we do with the news. You know, they can't sell newspapers with good news in them. They sell newspapers with something that stirs the feeling realms, that either frightens or excites, or something that has a lot of. But that doesn't mean that good dreams aren't remembered. So I just don't know the balance to that, but I would think that it would be similar to what we do with news. We can ignore some things more easily than others. So I think I just, you know, you can have three dreams in a night. You dream 5 to 7 times a night, whether you remember them or not. So there's already a process of selection going on, right?
Yes.
You may remember none of them, and you may remember, rarely does anybody remember all of them. Right? So if you can ask for direction, pay attention to what comes, and this is how you do that. The best way to remember a dream when you wake up in the night is, as soon as you know you're dreaming, be very still. Don't move. Because, you know, if you get up and go in the bathroom, by the time you get back, it's gone. In 30 seconds, it'll be gone. So you stay very still. And you go over the dream several times, and then you write it down. And after you've written it down in as much detail as you can, always, 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 you put down what you were feeling while you were in the dream. These are kinds of arrows of direction. In other words, if you and I had exactly the same dream, but I was frightened in my dream and you were animated and happy, then we're going down different paths.
Ah, good point.
And if we had the same symbols, you will see and recognize a symbol out of your own experience and out of your own makeup that could be absolutely opposite to the way I see it. So there isn't one interpretation to a dream. And when you're dreaming and you go to a group, when someone offers a dream, it's like everybody in it then becomes the gift to everybody in the group. It becomes a collective dream. It becomes a gift. And it's like Holy Communion. We all share it. And there's your bread.
It had a religious, it was a religious symbol. That could
it could be.
Definitely be. So this is more on the psychological side, but we talked the other day, and I thought this was just so interesting, about the repercussions to the way we live when we stay aligned with only one side, and how the people we dislike the most may be a side of us that we push aside. Can you talk about that extensively?
Sure.
It's called, it was so interesting.
So when you're born, your psyche is whole, but you are totally unconscious of it. And the coming into consciousness of the different parts of ourselves is what we mean by development. And so when you're young, you are unconscious to how and what is needed. What you want is survival and love. And so you find the best way within your family unit to feel, to get loved. And so you bring forward certain parts of you, but you can already tell that certain other parts of you are not valued by the family. And so we learn to live initially through the part that gets us the most love and to repress or push down the other side. Okay, now the only way to keep this other side down, which is just the poor old other half of yourself or parts of yourself, the only way to do that is to demonize that side. Okay, so now we've got good and bad, good and evil, all right? And so as we go through experiences in life, and as if, I'm going to say if at some point we learn to understand dreams and other things that point to how life really is, we will change, all right? Now, in order to never have to deal with the part of ourselves that was not so well accepted in the family, we do what's called projection, okay? And so the shadow side, the side you're repressing, any energy repressed over time turns dark. So then we have good and bad, good and evil. And how do we then learn through the side that is the initial one we chose, the primary selves that those are called? Those are the parts that say, we see you, don't have any idea what to do, don't worry, we'll handle it. And you'll have then sort of traditional ways you handle things, okay? So for me, being on the intuitive realm, if something is, if there's conflict, I tend to disappear, all right? If someone else encounters conflict and they're focused in another area of themselves, let's say the intellectual side, the thinking side, they will try to talk you out of the conflict. And then if they're on the feeling side, they'll probably burst into tears or have hysterics. And the last one would be if they're physically oriented, they'll punch you in the nose. Okay? So you know who you're dealing with. All right? Now, that's a gross generalization, but it gives you an idea that there are certain ways I became a pleaser. And that worked very well in my family, to be the pleaser. Right? But then that meant I was suppressing the part of me that could speak up and say, I don't think that's right, and I don't want to do that, et cetera, et cetera. Right? Somebody else in the family will carry that. And I would call that the selfish part, to hold it down on the other side. Right? That's how we end up projecting. So somebody comes into my life who takes very good care of themselves versus saying yes to everybody else's needs, right? And I call them selfish. And I project that part of myself onto them so I don't have to carry it around.
Wow.
I hope that makes some sense.
It makes so much sense. And it's really simple, you know, when you think about it. But
right.
You need to think about it to understand it.
Yeah.
And you also said that to take a look at who is bothering you the most and
write
everything down you don't like about them, and that may be an undeveloped part of ourselves that we're actually pushing away.
That's right. You can count on it. Okay, so if you... what you also need to know is there are many, many parts of self. We call them archetypes or types, right? And every human being has at least some of every one of them. And the combination that you get of a little of this and more of that, and you know, you're more the trickster, or you're more the nurse, or you're more the caretaker. If you have more of that, somebody else will have less of that, right? And this is how this is what we call personality. So every human being has everything every other human being has, but in different measurements. And that creates wildly different people, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which is just wonderful. And some people will and want to become internal and aware of these things. And other people aren't meant to go there. They don't need to go there. They contribute through what we like to call ordinary life. Well, ordinary life is pretty profound if you think about it as well. So it isn't that one is better than the other. The clue then, when you realize that the person you can't stand is carrying and exhibiting the parts you don't want anybody else to ever know you even have.
Wow.
And you might say, thank you. I know my friend Carolyn, when she goes by someone sitting on the street begging, she always, at least internally, says, thank you, so that I don't have to carry that. So... does that help?
Yeah. I know that you believe in the teachings of Carl Jung, who was quoted as saying, dreams are invariably seeking to express something that the ego does not know and does not understand. Can you talk about the role ego plays in our life and dreams?
Yes. So ego is the part of us that... it is how we identify ourselves. It's what we think we are. And the ego goes through all the experiences of life as a learning and a teaching. And the ego, the Jungian term for the opposite of the ego is the self with a capital S, the divine. Well, the ego gets all puffed up and thinks it is the divine and it is in charge of everything, and learns pretty quickly through humiliating experiences or trying to do something heroic that it's not capable of doing, goes through these periods of puffing oneself up, trying some heroic act. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, which then brings the ego down and deflates it. And then we, through the deflation, it starts to become a little more humble. And then it starts to get a little, have a few things go right. And then it starts to puff itself up again. And then we have the whole cycle over again. But each time we're growing, we're learning. And each time, because when you're born, the ego is at the center of the psyche. It's completely surrounded by it. And the way Jung looked at it, through each of these experiences, the ego starts to move up out of the self, the larger part of itself, and all of a sudden recognize that it is not the self. It is not the divine. But what is so beautiful is the divine needs us, needs our egos, as much as the ego needs the divine. And the ego's job is to create a clear pathway for the divine to come through.
When you say divine, what do you mean by that?
Whatever anyone understands to be the animating energy, the thing that gives us our life, our thoughts, our feelings. Again, you cannot make yourself have a feeling. And so the divine has every name that anyone has ever come up with or every religion has come up with. We're talking about the same sort of what is that? And to become balanced and to get the ego into a position of serving the self is what's sort of considered to be wholeness and balance. To explore and develop one part of yourself, let's say mind, body, spirit, feeling, that I was born into being either in spiritual or feeling, one of those two would be the two that I mostly developed, right? Then to be able, and most people almost all people develop one. Lots of people develop two. Some people develop three, and hardly anybody at all becomes conscious and aware of their own emotional, spiritual, physical, and mental process, and then can use it in the world consciously rather than having those primary selves that come in at birth run the show. A really good analogy is you want to become the conductor of your own orchestra. Not have the orchestra running itself, but become aware and connected and in charge of those aspects of yourself.
Is there do you have any recommendations for developing that?
Life. Pay attention. Sit down. Be quiet. Meditation is a really big help. And it doesn't have to be some huge enterprise where it takes months and years of your life. It can be 10 minutes a day. And I'd rather have you meditate 5 minutes than not meditate 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Life is set up for this. Anybody in your life dies. It drags you through something you would never volunteer to go through. Well, some people do, and they're very good at helping people die. But just in terms of general, the general way we live, having the capacity to have control of yourself is one way of putting it. When we feel out of control, there are certain things we'll do that can be harmful to the whole situation. The more balanced we get, the more we can tolerate in terms of input in life. And the more exciting it becomes, the more easily you handle things you could not handle early on.
So when you said your friend Carolyn was one of the few people that you have ever met that may not have an ego, what she's doing is
awful. Let me say, yeah, I should have not done that. That she developed, she made her ego conscious. There's an awareness in her that enlarges her area of development. And so she's not thrown as easily as people who've not done that.
When you analyzed my dream, you said a quote that I just never forgot. You said, "Masculine is the size of a rowboat and feminine is the size of an ocean."
Right.
What is the masculine side and the feminine side of human beings, and how do they play a role in our life and our dreams?
Okay. Masculine and feminine are not necessarily gender. They can be gender, but masculine and feminine in this regard, the masculine part of us is the doing part. It's the go get 'em. It's the write it all down. It's the engineer. It's the architect. And feminine is the water. Okay, so the watery, masculine would be a box, a square. Feminine would be a circle or a curve. Feminine is the intuition. It is the great mother, as the masculine is the father. You know, we're not talking about individual human beings as well as we are talking about individual human beings. We are divided that way. But we are also talking about something collective, something huge. And that's what Jung's great discovery was, that we don't just have an individual psyche. We are part of something called the collective psyche, with everything that's ever happened in the human world as part of it. It's there. When someone is psychic or intuitive, that's where they're getting their material. A psychic or an intuitive is someone who knows something without having had the experience, but he has or she has access to the unconscious. And that's a gift, and that's a particular aspect of us, and it's stronger in some than others. It's not better, it's not worse, just is.
Are we experiencing a lot of collective psyche because people have so much anxiety these days because of the news and stuff? Is there more of a collective psyche going on in the world today?
Yes, lots of people are touched by that. Your friends who are dreaming of their teeth falling out. Well, there's a lot of polarization in the world right now. Nobody seems to be able to hold both sides at the same time. And that's another image. If you think of coming to the place where you can go with your right hand and say yes, and open your hand, and to the left side say yes, then that's a period of time of peace usually. People can talk things over. It doesn't matter. You don't cut somebody off because they're one party or another. But what has happened, if you remember the cycle I started to mention about how the ego goes through periods of being heroic and periods of falling flat on their face, of being overtaken, you know, by the collective energies, by being terrified, really, about the dark side. And each of us has a different way of seeing the world, but it's not one is evil and one is good. But that's the way it ends up being treated when we're at a particular part of the cycle where the trying to think of a simple way to put this, that the shadow is on one side and that's everybody else, and this is it. We're trying to get from me and mine to we and ours. And we don't see one another as family. We see one another as the ones to be feared, the ones who are less than. And the more, there's a story called The Hundredth Monkey. Many, many people know this story, but it's a true story that in Malaysia somewhere, in a big lake, there was an island in the middle of a huge lake, and there were monkeys on the island and monkeys on the shore. And one day, the monkey on the island began to wash his food before he ate it. And over time, all the monkeys on the island did that. And then one day, all the monkeys on the shore began to do it. And the point of the story is, not everybody has to come into balance. It's a critical number of people who can hold both sides, who are strong enough to see yes and yes, and to work through things little by little, rather than kind of an instant polarization. You're all wrong and I'm all right. And I hope that helps.
It does. And I think dark side, you know, my dark side will be different than my next door neighbor's dark side, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, it's troubling times, but I got something fun to do. I asked the ordinary vegan community if they experienced recurring dreams, and not only did the majority experience recurring dreams, many had common experiences in their dreams. So I wanted to share some of those dreams and those symbols and get your thoughts on them.
Wonderful.
First off, there are a lot of dreams about suitcases and missing flights. so many. And I have that all the time. I am always, you know, worried about missing a flight.
Mm-hmm. And for you, what does that mean? Does that signal us?
And then the plane never really, it flies, but it's only like 10 feet off the ground. So I have no idea what it means, honestly. Maybe just being, I don't know, overscheduled or?
Oh, by the way. Most dreams that go in this way, I love that it's only 10 feet off the ground. For all your efforting and anxiety and pushing, the plane is 10 feet off the ground. So they did a study with lawyers in law firms. And, you know, they put in 60, 80-hour weeks usually. And then they went to several of them and they had them stop that. They were only allowed to work 40 hours a week. The outcome was the ones working 40 hours a week accomplished more.
I like that.
So all the pressuring of yourself and the trying to fit too many things in is not so helpful as you might think. And the psyche is saying, pay attention. Pay attention, you're missing something. And how could you look at your schedule? You know, we get into an idea of what the collective thinks we should be doing, and that may not be what we should be doing at all, you know, but it's a very powerful thing, a collective. You know, to stand up and say something different in the middle of a crowd that's all interested in one thing. It's like a sheep sticking his head up out of the flock and becomes a target. And so if you don't use your collective ideas, but sit down and be quiet and think and find out what's coming through you, what you really think might be better, what you're willing to experiment with. If you're willing to take 10 minutes a day and be still and build on that a little bit, you know, but it's a recurring dream. You're absolutely right. It's I love your variation of hardly getting off the ground. That should make some sense to you the next time you do it. You know, this isn't really helping.
Right. This I see. So missing flights and suitcases, trying to pack suitcases, it's just that we're in overload.
Yes, and suitcases, too, are an interesting image of where do we carry all our stuff, you know? It's a container of sorts, and for the ones who can't quite get the top of it closed, you know, it's not subtle. Most of us know, but we don't give credence to it. Yeah. Because so many other people are telling you it has to be done. It has to be done, whatever they want, whatever the larger energetic is pushing. It takes strength, and you get the strength from being quiet and just being still. You'd be surprised what that brings, just breathing easily. It doesn't have to be elaborate.
Okay, another recurring a theme from many people were natural disasters like tsunamis and tornadoes coming out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Tsunamis are tied to our tsunami dreams are tied to the emotions. And a tsunami, a huge wave of emotion, is not at all unlikely, right? That is happening. And how do you handle that? What actually happens in the dream? Do you get away from it? Do you run upstairs? What happens? So each individual who has this dream might look at it, if there's an outcome, if it feels more like it's actually happening to you, you know? So don't tie it to a wave of water necessarily, but where are you emotionally and what's happening for you and what care do you need to reduce this overwhelm and to be kind to yourself? We are, I think, one of the largest parts of us in these days is the critic, you know, and every part has an opposite. So if you have a big critic that has a lot to say, and he weighs 500 pounds, I'd be looking around for your cheerleader and see if she's not bulimic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Start to develop that contrary side and pull it out, because somehow you have, if the critic is that big, and it's not just the critic and the pusher, and there's several of them that work together. If you can take a moment and say, what would I say the opposite of the critic is? Okay, for me, it's a cheerleader. It might come up as something different, very likely would for you. But when you know you're suppressing something, it'll be negative. And if it's negative, so let's say you have a critic on one side and a wishy-washy person on the other, okay? That's negative, right? What would be a neutral term for that wishy-washy side that you're busy pushing down? So what could be an opposite word for critic of the critic, a word that's opposite to the critic that's not negative? And that's the way you work with that. You start to develop it and pull it up and make it conscious and realize how important it is.
A couple of people brought up that they kill people. They kill someone, and it's particularly violent. And it's very, very disturbing to them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say to that?
Well, again, things are always dying back, are coming into the unconscious and dying back out, okay? So dying is a word for ending a particular, a particular time in your life, a particular segment of your life, right? So if they will talk about who they were killing and what they thought of them, they will get to see what they're afraid of in themselves. When we do not develop but continue to repress parts, then we make them stronger in the collective. These are things that take a lot of willingness to go deep and to plumb the sewers of your own psyche. And not everyone is meant to do that. And it's certainly not meant to be an indictment of anybody. It's what is.
Right.
For me. Maybe not for other people.
Right.
But for me.
Yeah, but I can totally understand why it would be disturbing. I certainly would get disturbed if I was dreaming that kind of thing, you know?
Right, absolutely. And even if you have a strong basis in the psychological material, it's still disturbing.
How about people who dream of flying? I am so jealous of that. I have never flown in a dream.
You mean you're only 10 feet off the ground? You were
in a plane, though. I'm not physically flying.
Yes. Two things for that. Children often dream of flying. And the reason they think is they don't have a whole lot of control over their own lives. And so it's an act of freedom. It's getting loose, you know?
Yeah.
And for an adult, it's often the need to move above something, to just the sheer joy of movement and also perspective. We see things differently from above them, more objectively than we do at the level of whatever it is. So the old saying that you can't solve a problem at the level of the problem. Sometimes a flying dream will give you a different perspective.
How about people that, this came up a lot, they're dreaming of houses.
Huh. Well, houses and cars are almost always an image of the self. So is your house a cabin? Is it a palace? Is it You know, are you in a VW Volkswagen or are you in a Maserati? These are images of the self.
That's great. I mean, that's so clear. And I love that. And how about UFOs or the end of the world?
Jung looked at that as aspects. I think he said once, it's not to say they don't exist, but when we dream about them, they are often aspects that we either don't know about or don't want to know about, alien to our way of seeing the world. And they can bring, again, different perspective, shake you up a bit, have you look at how you might be feeling alienated, how you might be longing for something entirely different and unknown. Your life might be too small.
And how about when this happened, you and I discussed this for one of my dreams, but when some random person appears in your dream, what does that represent?
It's a wonderful way to know what the dream is about. So if it's a random person you know, then you do what we call pointing the finger. Oh, that person. That person is this, 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 and this. And don't hold back, whether it's overvaluing or undervaluing the person. Then, as you're pointing the finger, you look and see you have four fingers pointing back at yourself. And so it's a way for you to see very, very simply, because the person brings up some level of feeling in you, what's going on inside, what wants to be dealt with.
Okay, that makes so much sense. And it did to me when, you know, we examined that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you know anything about sleep paralysis?
I do know a little bit about sleep.
And and then mm-hmm. some people say that they have it in their dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Birds, when they clamp onto a branch at night, go into paralysis, right? So they don't fall out of the tree. Dreams, you've heard of people who sleepwalk, that can be dangerous. So there is something called a sleep paralysis that's a positive thing. And that it keeps you from rolling out of the bed or hitting your sleeping partner with the lamp or something like that. It's really a matter of making you a little safer because you're not in your normal consciousness. You're not aware. You're in the unconscious. So that's about as much as I know about it, but I love it that birds do that.
Yeah, I never thought of that. And we could go on forever with this, but I'll end with one that I think was really funny. One person told me they have a recurring dream of being chased by cows. Isn't that cute? I love that.
I'd like to know their relationship with their mother.
Oh, okay.
Cows are a great symbol of mother. So what is their relationship to their own mother, to the divine mother, to why are the cows, you know, what is it the cows want? And they are practically the symbol of mother, if you think about it. Even in East India, you know, the cows were sacred. Sure. I don't know if the bulls were, but the cows certainly were.
Well, that never occurred to me when I read that.
And good, I'm glad you said that, because the last thing I want to say is, in order, you know, if I'm going to help you with a dream and it doesn't ring true, then it's not true. You have to have an aha or some sort of feeling that you trust in yourself about what's correct for you and what isn't.
Tricia, this has been so much fun. I just love this, and I thank you so much. Can you tell people where they can find you, or can they actually get a dream analyzed by you?
Sure. I'll be traveling until February of 2019, but they can reach me at my email, which is dreamdrop676@gmail.com. And that's DREAMDROP 676@gmail.
I just don't know what to say. Thank you so much. And this was so much fun and a nice break from talking about chronic disease.
I'll call you for that, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Tricia.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining me today, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find all my podcasts on my website, ordinaryvegan.net, on iTunes, on Spotify, even Alexa, or your favorite podcatcher. Last week, we talked about the 21-day Clean Whole Foods Challenge, and I will begin mine on November 1st. Please, if anyone wants to join me, head over to facebook.com/groups/ordinaryvegan, and I will post updates every day. As many of you know by now, I now sell vegan, all-natural, plant-based CBD oil from hemp. If you are experiencing any chronic pain, studies have shown that CBD oil from hemp may help reduce chronic pain by impacting the endocannabinoid receptor activity and reducing inflammation and pain. Many people are replacing opioids and over-the-counter pain medication with this natural plant. Many of my customers use it to improve symptoms from multiple sclerosis, depression, anxiety, and a host of medical problems. I decided to sell CBD oil from hemp because our ordinary vegan community convinced me that it was helping so many of you out there, and I wanted to make sure you could purchase a safe and reliable product. Always remember, not all CBD oil is created equal. Last but not least, I am excited to announce that I am now selling an organic deep pain cream that is made from a CBD isolate, which is 99% CBD, which makes it even more effective for pain. I also added arnica, almond and avocado butter, hemp seed oil, frankincense, lemongrass, lavender, and vitamin E, which has been proven to be helpful for pain management. All natural plant-based products to help you live a long and painless life. You can find my CBD products at ordinaryvegan.net. Thanks for being here, everyone. I am always here to serve you, and I hope I'm doing a good job. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.